20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back, Packers fans, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Welcome to the weekend. It is your Saturday crew. I am Jason Perrone, along with Mark Eckel and Paul Bredel. Mark, how are we living?
I'm doing the best I can down here.
All right. Fantastic.
In these crazy times that we are living in.
And Paul, in the great state of Wisconsin, how are we doing?
Fantastic, Jason. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well. I am doing well, in fact. So,
Give us the weather update there.
You know, I was going to kind of skip that for once because I was like, I wonder if the audience gets tired of that. But no, it's 108 degrees here in Phoenix. No surprise. It's July in Phoenix, so it is what it is.
108's not bad. You know, it's been hotter.
Yeah. And I think, Paul, aren't you kind of in the middle of what I remember in my days in the Midwest was that 1 week a year where it's just really hot and humid?
That's been about the last 2 weeks, and there was a slight two-day break, but it's coming back, or already is back. So it's back to hot and humid.
All right, so if you're out cutting the grass or doing anything like that, just make sure you stay hydrated.
Working a little harder.
Yeah, no doubt. So we're gonna kind of revisit a past draft today on our show. We're going to talk about the 2018 draft because this is the 2020 season is that critical third year for this draft class. And after the third year, it's typically said that you can appropriately assess a draft class. So without any further ado, I'll just real quickly recap who the Packers chose in that draft and when. I'll just go through the names real quickly, and then we can kind of go through them and talk about some of the highlights and, unfortunately, some of the lowlights, because this draft is still kind of at a tipping point, right? So in 2018, this was Brian Gutekunst's first draft behind the wheel of the car, and his first draft pick in round one was Jair Alexander, cornerback. So he moved around and finagled his way back to pick Jair Alexander and was able to pick up another first-round pick in 2019 from the New Orleans Saints, which eventually became Darnell Savage. And in the second round, the Packers got another cornerback, Josh Jackson out of Iowa. A lot of hype around Jackson. He was projected in the first round by a lot of experts, but he ended up falling to Green Bay in round two. Round three, the Packers got Oren Burks, the linebacker out of Vanderbilt. Round four, they finally addressed the wide receiver position, picked Jamon Moore, who is no longer with the Packers. Round five, they had three fifth-round draft picks. They picked Cole Madison with the first, punter J.K. Scott with the second, and then Marquez Valdez-Scantling with the third fifth-round pick. Their sixth-round pick that year was Equanimeous St. Brown, so they had a lot of wide receivers. And then three seventh-round picks, James Looney, who's an interesting story because he is no longer playing the position he was drafted at, Hunter Bradley, who is the team's long snapper, and Kendall Donerson, who is no longer with the Packers. So just real quick before we jump into the granulars of it all, 9 of 11 of these guys are still tied to the team. Mark, what is your headline for the 2018 draft so far, knowing that there's still a lot yet to be discovered and written?
Headline, Alexander the Great, and not much else.
I guess that's fair. Paul, what would your headline be?
Make or break.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true. There's a lot of guys to kind of talk about here. I mean, when we start, if we go in order and we start with Jair Alexander, I mean, he's on his way to becoming a star. I don't think there's any question that he's made it in the NFL and he was seemingly worthy of his first-round draft stature. So, I mean, you know, what else can we say about a guy who in the third year, I mean, I thought he might have taken a little bit of a bigger step forward in 2019, but I'm not concerned that he can't still do that this year. He just seems like a smart, instinctive corner. He's kind of everything you want in a cornerback, Mark. Would you agree?
I called him Alexander Grano. I mean, he was a very good pick. Actually better than he was projected to be. I remember that draft. He was considered a low first round pick when the Packers took him at what, number 18, I believe it was. Some people thought that was a little high. They thought some people had him going low 20s even. They saw, and he also didn't fit the Packer mold a cornerback that had been established, I guess, God, way back to the Ron Wolf days, and then followed by Ted Thompson. The Packers usually draft bigger corners, but they saw something in Alexander. Alexander plays bigger than he is. Let's be honest.
Yep.
You know, his vertical is very good. He's pretty physical for a guy his size. He's a complete package. I mean, he can cover. He can run. He's athletic. There's no reason why he shouldn't become a perennial Pro Bowl cornerback.
Well, and Paul, we talked about Jair a little bit last week about how ideal might it be if the Packers had the flexibility to even move him inside a bit, just because of what Mark said. He's so versatile and he's got a lot of tools in the toolbox.
Yeah, I mean, he's a tremendous player, and really up to this point, for the most part, he's kind of keeping this draft class afloat. And before we dive into the players following Alexander, I just want to say this, and you guys can chime in, but I assume you'll agree. Am I writing this class off yet. I think there's still a lot of potential for several of these guys who can step up this year and make an impact. But the way I see 2020 for them and just the class in general is it's make or break, as I said, was my headline, because it's just been a lot of up and down, inconsistent play or lack of playing time in general from several of these, you know, picks through the first 5-6 rounds. And if another year that takes place, there's a very good possibility that the Packers might move on from a few of them next offseason, or they might not make it to week one of next year. So this is a, you know, make or break season. If a few of them can bounce back with Jair Alexander's talent and what he brings, that all pro potential, all of a sudden this class, you start going, okay, that's not too bad. If things go south, I don't know, then it's just, it could look pretty just not very good at all, even with what Jair brings to the table.
I think it's fair that to give it a chance and see what goes on here. But Mark, I'm looking at the list of players that fit that category of need to make a big jump and almost turn into something that they have yet to show that they can be. And it does make you a little, kind of gives you a little bit of pause, at least to say, well, how likely are many of them, or you could even say any of them maybe, to do that?
Yeah, I'm with you a little bit there. Yeah, I don't. Same Brown is one of the keys. I think we're all hopeful that, and we've talked about him the last couple of weeks as well, that he could be a decent wide receiver, not a star, but if he becomes a solid contributor at wide receiver, that's a pretty good 6th round pick. So he could make him alone could make this a better draft. And I'm going to go back to what Ron Wolf said a long time ago when talking about drafts, and he was pretty good at it. If you hit on one out of every 3 picks in a draft class, you did pretty well. So the Packers had, what, 11 picks that year, you said? It was 11?
Yep.
So they need to get probably like four out of the 11. That would be a little bit more than 1 out of 3. And then it's considered a pretty good draft. Well, they got we know they have one in Alexander. The punters, I mean, he's not the best punter in the league, but he's a punter. He every once and again, his problem has been just not being that consistent, and then that might come with time. I was gonna say it's kind of sad to say that as of right now, I mean, it's just based off what they've done after 2 years, the second best player in the draft might be the long snapper.
Yeah,
that's kind of sad. I mean, he's been the most. He's, you know, he hasn't done anything wrong. He's taken every long snap for 2 years, right? I mean, it's just kind of, it tells you that's more of an indictment of the second, third, fourth, fifth round picks, that the 7th round long snapper is considered one of the better players of it.
Yeah, and I guess this was a year to address special teams. I mean, they spent a 5th-round draft pick on J.K. Scott, a punter, and they picked him before they picked Marquez Valdes-Scantling or Equanimeous St. Brown, which is hard to, you know, when you remember that and you think about it, it's kind of baffling. And then, Paul, I don't know if you remember it as much. Mark, I know you and I remember 2003 when they used a high pick on B.J. Sander.
It was a third round pick,
which is insane. It just, and it was, did any of you guys get flashbacks to where you were like, oh, this guy's never going to pan out with such a high draft stature?
No, it is. Well, see, I kind of follow Alabama a little bit. I kind of like Nick Saban. I'm like the one sports writer that actually likes Nick Saban. But no, so I thought that was a good. I liked Scott. I thought, you know, I said, wow, okay, that's a. I kind of like. I didn't mind that pick at all in the fifth round. I don't, he wouldn't have been there in the sixth round. He was going through. I mean, all the grades. He was considered, you know, the top punter in that class. There was another punter too. I forget his name now. That went right. He either went right before J.K. or right after him. There were two punters that went in the fifth round. I think Seattle took him, if I'm not mistaken. So no, I wasn't. I did not have flashbacks to that ridiculous pick of Mike Sherman's. What year was that? 2000.
I think it was 2003. Yeah.
That was awful. That was just an awful, awful pick. But there's a lot of those under Mike Sherman. So, no, I mean, and if Scott's the Packers punter for 8 to 10 years, there's nothing wrong with that pick, right?
Right. Yeah, no, and remember, I say this tongue in cheek, Mark. Just remember that, you know, Mike Sherman's his justification was that, hey, it's not just BJ. He's a left-footed punter. The ball is going to spin funny, and the returners are going to fumble left and right because they're not going to be used to the spin of the ball coming at him. I just remember that being one of his rationales when he made that pick, and it was just like, no, you're not going to justify a third round. This is Sebastian Janikowski.
They moved up.
Yeah.
Worst in taking him in the third. They moved up. They gave up more than that to get him.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you're probably right. I've forgotten a lot about that that draft, except for Nick
Barnett.
Actually,
It was 2004.
Okay.
Not three.
All right.
I don't want to get off track here, but talk about a bad draft. You want to hear the 2004 draft? I just looked it up. How about this draft? Ahmad Carroll, Joey Thomas, Donnell Washington, B.J. Sanders, a bunch of trades, Corey Williams, Scott Wells. That might be the worst draft in Packer history.
Mm-hmm.
The only guy that made it, the only guy that made any kind of impact was the last guy, Scott Wells, the center. That's a bad draft. Oh my god!
And do you remember? Do you guys remember how many years B.J. Sanders was the Packers punter?
Less than one.
One.
Right?
Yeah, even made it through 04, he was less than one year in the league. Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. Yes. Why do we always do this to our listeners, Mark? We always go down some sort of a road from Packers past where we're just shaking our head, and Paul's probably thankful that he was younger and didn't have to deal with it, didn't remember as much about it. But although that's not necessarily true. Paul is a savant. And we'll get to some of the stuff he's working on at Dairyland Express. You know, if he's not putting up 5 articles a day, he's slacking. So that's a lot of Packers knowledge coming at you there is what I'm trying to say there. So getting back to the top of the list and some better news there. Yeah, Jaire Alexander, the arrow's pointing up and a lot to be determined at the cornerback position. Like we said in weeks past, if you know, the next guy we're going to talk about can take a huge step forward this year, or if Kadar Holman, for example, can take a big step forward, then Jaire gets to move around and they can really kind of turn him into a Swiss Army knife. I mean, wherever he lines up and plays, like you said, Mark, he plays bigger than he is. And that's all you ask of a cornerback. Just be around the ball and disrupt things. And Jaire Alexander absolutely does that without a doubt. So moving into round two of 2018, that's Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson, we've talked about him a lot. He's kind of slipped his way into our conversations at least the last week, and maybe the week before that too. Showed great in preseason his rookie year. It looked like he was going to be a guy, and that just never translated. He made a big special teams play in week two against the Vikings in 2018. He recovered the punt that Geronimo Allison blocked and scored a touchdown on special teams, and you just thought, man, he's a gamer, and he just cannot find the field. So, Paul, I'll start with you. I know we've talked about Jackson, so maybe we don't have to spend as much time on him because we've talked about him a lot lately. But it's, you know, if you want to boil it down to the simplest issue, he's not on the field.
Yeah, I mean, his rookie season, he played or started in 10 games, and he took his lumps. But I mean, to some extent, that should be expected. He's a rookie being thrust into that starting role. But he did lead the team in penalties. And then 2019, everything got derailed with that injury last summer, and then he just tumbled down the depth chart. And from there, he was just never able to recover. And looking ahead, I obviously hope that he can take a step forward, but it's hard to see where he fits in. He hasn't displayed that, you know, that speed that where you can trust him out wide on a cornerback. And then inside, he is competing for that slot role, if he is to see significant snaps there, just once again, wonder about his quickness and how he'd be able to handle that. So, I mean, from his skill set and just, you know, obviously has great ball skills, but the speed is the biggest thing that I'm concerned about moving forward. But at some point, like you said, he has to see the field.
Yeah, he's got to find to make his way on. So, Mark, is Josh Jackson going to find the field in 2020?
The optimist in me says, yeah, sure, he's going to improve. He's going to get back to where when he was at Iowa, and Gary Gray is going to really coach him up. But I don't know. I can't. I got to say this. You know, I do a lot of work pre-draft. Always have when I covered the Eagles, and nobody's 100% on players. But when I've been wrong on a player, it's usually the other way around. It's usually a guy. I mean, and that was a bad pick. What did they take that guy for? And that guy just turns out to be pretty good. Rarely do I think a guy is going to be good, and he turns out to not to be good. And I thought when they got Jackson in the second round, I was like, wow, they got Alexander, and like that's a perfect combination. The smaller, fast guy, the bigger guy that makes plays. You know, I mean, he was really. And Paul, you probably saw him play more in college than I did covering the Big Ten, right? But I mean, he was good at Iowa, and I was
really good.
And I was good. It's not like he was good at, you know, West Tennessee State. He was good at it for a good team, playing against good teams. I mean, I had, you know, scouts from other teams when I was working on that draft in 2018. I had a couple guys have had him as the number one corner, and nobody had him lower than like third. So I mean, he was. There's something's going wrong. I don't know what it is. I mean, he wouldn't be the first great college player to not make it in the pros, but there's ability there. I mean, we all saw it. So maybe, like I said, maybe Gary Gray brings the most out of him. But yeah, I thought that when that draft ended, I thought, well, you know what? The Packers are set at corner now for the next, you know, whatever many years.
And this summer is going to be.
I was half right.
I was going to say this summer is huge for him because he played less than 10% of the defensive snaps last year. So clearly he doesn't have the trust of the coaching staff. So now we're in these unusual times where preseason's already been cut in half. I mean, he's really going to have to make a count in training camp and in the preseason games that are currently scheduled. Otherwise, I mean, if he starts off week one, two, three, you know, as the fourth, fifth guy on the cornerback depth chart, it's just hard to see other than injury, an opportunity that's going to arise for him.
Yeah, and I mean, I think maybe the Packers saw they liked his skill set or some of his. I mean, he wasn't super fast. Paul, you mentioned his speed's an issue, but maybe they liked some of his athleticism that he showed. Or, you know, I mean, he's bought into the defense and he's got that game face and he's got that kind of mentality. Just hasn't been able to find the field, and I guess that would be a good transition if we're just going to skip around just a tiny bit here. And Jamon Moore, the fourth round pick in 2018, he's not even with the Packers anymore. He's with the Browns now, and he was a bust in Green Bay. I mean, he couldn't get on the same thing. You know, great athleticism. Now, he had the athleticism, and he had the numbers that made sense as to why the Packers might look to make something out of him, but, you know, they thought they were drafting who was going to be a fast riser and another top athlete. He just never put it together. He tried. I mean, he put out that, you guys remember when he put out that workout tape last offseason? He had his helmet on. He was working on his footwork and his route running. And you thought to yourself, okay, maybe he's learned from guys like Devontae how to prepare and how to keep yourself, you know, improving and fresh in the offseason. But it was just kind of to no avail. That's another example there, Mark, of a guy who the Packers hoped was going to pan out. The athleticism was there, but it just didn't translate to the field.
Well, he couldn't catch.
Yeah, he dropped so many passes.
that's a bad thing if you're a wide receiver to not be able to catch, because that's kind of number one is on the list of things to do is catch the ball.
Yep.
He had hands of stone. I mean, he was all. It's a shame, and that plagued him in college. I mean, with his size, speed ratio, and that athleticism, he shouldn't have been a fourth round pick. He should have been a second, maybe a low. I mean, if he had better hands, he's nowhere near the fourth round. He's mm-hmm. long gone by the fourth round.
Right.
But that was the knock on him in college, was he couldn't catch. He dropped everything, and it didn't get better. And it's a shame because, like you said, he had all the right, you know, good size, great speed. You know, he ran okay routes, but he had to catch the ball. Maybe they should have moved him to corner.
Yeah, that is why a lot of corners end up playing corner, because they can't.
Damn field.
If Kevin King was more of a receiver and less of a corner, he would have had, like you said, Mark, he would have had maybe 7 or 8 picks last year. So here's another frustrating one. Like, let's go back around here. Oren Burks, the third round linebacker. So the athleticism, once again, here we are. You know, Gutz saying true to himself, he's sticking within that athletic profile. He was heavily lauded for his athleticism getting drafted. My initial thought was that injuries were what was holding him back, because he suffered one in each of his first two seasons kind of early in the year, but he still wasn't able to get on the field. So it just didn't seem like that was really the problem. You know, he showed well in camp. He, you know, he's on the highlight films. We talked about the media tweeting and everybody getting excited about it. There was a video of him picking off a ball in front of Aaron Jones last training camp, but he didn't get a lot of opportunities with Blake Martinez, this is the preferred starter, and all the sub packages that the Packers ran, which meant there weren't going to be multiple linebackers on the field. But I also want to mention that Martinez kept his starting role through the coaching change. So that to me says that Oren Burks didn't show enough to get on the field with McCarthy's staff or with Matt LaFleur's staff. I don't know if that sticks out to you, Paul, in terms of Oren Burks.
Yeah, I mean, injuries have been an issue for him, like you said, and each of the summers now he's had to miss some time. But, I mean, at this point in his career, he's not a three-down linebacker either. He really struggles against the run. Once a blocker has him engaged, he's pretty much taken out of the play. And as far as his coverage goes, he still needs to get quicker and develop, you know, just diagnosing what's going on. And I think those are the two, along with the injuries, those three things have really hindered him. But that play that you mentioned last summer with Aaron Jones, I was there and I was front row watching, and it was incredibly impressive. It was in that moment where you go, okay, this is why they drafted him. You know, just seeing his ability to stick with him in coverage like that. And, you know, there weren't blockers that he had to worry about. He was only focused on Jones, so obviously that made it a lot easier than it would be in an NFL game. But that athleticism, that reaction, that playmaking, that was the, oh, there it is. That's why they traded up for Oren Burks. That's why they love this guy. But in the, you know, the normal game setting, the run or the tackle, or sorry, against the run, and in coverage, he just hasn't been able to put it together.
Yeah, Paul, you were not alone with that particular clip. Mark, I don't know if you saw that, but I know that I know you have your thoughts on Burks.
Yeah, I mean, when I said I was wrong about Jackson, I thought he was going to be good. Anyway, I wasn't wrong about Burks. I forget who I wanted there. I was trying to look it up to remember. It wasn't Burks. There was somebody that's still there in the third round that I kind of wanted, and they took Oren Burks. I'm like, really? Linebacker from Vanderbilt? Tell me the last linebacker from Vanderbilt to do anything. Tell me a player from Vanderbilt to do anything in the NFL. I don't want Vanderbilt guys. But, you know, I mean, he, you know, you said he wasn't on, you know, you compared Blake Martinez and said that, you know, they used a lot of stuff. Well, the reason they were using safeties instead of linebackers is because Burks couldn't play. I think in a perfect world, they would have rather had Burks and Martinez a linebacker and not have to use a Raven Green until he got hurt, and then, you know, Campbell and a bunch of other guys. But that's the worst pick of the draft, of that draft. I mean, he just, and they traded up to get him too, so they gave up more than just a third. I'll say this, but a third round pick should be more than this. He's a damn good special teams player, and that's where his athleticism and you know, shows on the field, because he's good. He's very. I saw Redmond's graded out as their best special teams player last year. I don't know. I don't know who's doing the grades, but my my eyes told me that Burks was their best special teams player. He seemed like he was always, if he wasn't making the tackle, he was, you know, around the guy and just doing, he's a, but again, you know, if he's taken in a fifth or sixth round, you say, okay, we got a good special teams player in the fifth, sixth round, but third round, you got to be more than that.
Well, there was one player out of Vanderbilt that ended up being really good for the Packers, and his name was Jay Cutler. So he was probably one of the best picks the Packers have ever benefited from out of Vanderbilt, if you want my honest opinion. So, I think thank you for that too. I was waiting patiently for it, and I was like, "Ooh, this is going to be good." Oren Burks kind of disappointing, but at least he's contributing in some way. But like you said, Mark, when you're a third round pick, I mean, I don't think you get the hall pass for okay, he's a solid special teamer. Until you're maybe in the bottom half of the fourth round and later. You know, if you're right. Earlier than that, you should be a contributor in some way, shape, or form, and Burks just hasn't done that yet. Now, his size isn't just going to change overnight. So, Paul, the issues that you mentioned that he has in run support are probably not going to fix themselves. We'll see. I mean, we haven't had a lot of updates on what the team is doing or what these players are looking like because there haven't been any activities. So, you know, hopefully we'll learn a lot more once camp drops. But Burks is going to be one to watch because the team's going to want him to pan out. They're going to give him the opportunities, and hopefully he does. But I talked about the fifth round, the busy fifth round the Packers had, and when their first fifth round pick was guard Cole Madison, an interesting case because he missed his entire rookie season as he was dealing with some mental health stuff and just kind of dealing with the tragic loss of his friend and former teammate from college. And then he gets into full training camp, so he's essentially a rookie in his second year, and he doesn't crack the lineup, isn't a starter, and he's hanging on because the Packers used an investment of a fifth-round pick on him. And I didn't hear anything great about how he's looking in practice, but then his whole season got derailed in November when he suffered a season-ending knee injury in practice, and he wasn't getting a lot of push or playing time as it was, but I think he now faces a pretty steep uphill climb to get into the mix when you've got several preferred players in front of him on the interior of the offensive line, and a lot of them are veterans who've already established themselves. I don't know, Paul, do you agree? I mean, Cole Madison, I'm not saying I don't think he'll be on the roster, but I don't think he may be a casualty, but I don't think his stature or his ability to move up is looking too good at this point.
No, the guard position or interior line, that's one of the deeper units on this team, and you know, having to we already know that Billy Turner, Lane Taylor are going to have spots. They just spent two draft picks on guards and Stepaniak and John Runyon, and then there's Lucas Patrick as well. It's going to be really tough for him to make the 53 coming out of this summer, especially with returning from IR. And he's not that experienced to begin with. Like you said, he missed his first season. Last year it was shortened, even in practices, because of the injury. So it is an uphill battle for him.
Yeah, and Mark, it sounds like you probably agree. Cole Madison's he's up against it.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he makes – I mean, unless there's, you know, God forbid, a rash injury to the guys that we just mentioned, I don't see him making the team. And it's a shame. The kid, you know – like you said, he walked away his first year to deal with some pretty serious stuff, and he came back, and what a great story that was, right? He overcomes it, he comes back, and then he tears his knee. So it's just, I mean, that's just really, really bad luck for a kid that, you know. And now, again, if the Packers thought even a little bit of him, you don't draft, you know, three interior linemen this year if you think you have something in Cole Madison. So yeah, I think he's not on the do they maybe put him on the practice squad? I don't know, probably not, because I think they like some of their other young linemen even better than him, like the kid from Virginia Tech they signed last year as a free agent. I think his days are numbered.
Yeah, it could be. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's what happens when you miss your first season and then you have an injury, and sometimes injuries alone are just hard to come back from, and that's a big body. You know, big body putting a lot of weight on that knee, and you've seen guys come back and bounce back from it before, but you're talking about a guy who's not only trying to bounce back, but trying to take a, make a big jump forward. It's gonna be iffy at best for him. I think I'm in agreement with you guys, and I'm gonna skip over the two receivers because I want to kind of end with those two because we've talked a lot about Valdes-Scantling and EQ, and just kind of round out the rest of the draft. So, Mark, you mentioned Hunter Bradley, and again, here's the Packers drafting a long snapper when typically guys like that are taken as undrafted free agents or, you know, maybe at the way back of the draft. So, you know, he was drafted late, but he has panned out. I think there was some question as to whether or not he was going to work out and he was going to be part of the, you know, the kicking unit with Mason Crosby and J.K. Scott. And, you know, with all that changeover, you got two new, you know, two-thirds of the field goal unit. You know, the key players on there are different, but it seems like he's figured it out and kind of gotten it together. And the Packers might have, you know, at least they don't have to have Brett Goode on speed dial anymore, which seemed to kind of be their solution every year for so many years, right?
No, I like, again, when that, I go back to what my original thought was when Nick Bain, and what else was saying, a long snapper. I'm like, yeah, they need a long snapper. Yeah, you know, maybe you wait and roll dice that you get him as a free agent, but maybe he signs some free agent. You have no control. I mean, you make him an offer, but the Giants might make him a better offer. The Seahawks might make him a better offer. You don't want to get a bidding war over an undrafted long snapper.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, let's look at some of the past seventh round picks. You know, they take the year prior. Well, they take Devontae Mays. He didn't even make the team. It took Malachi Dupree. He didn't make the team. That the current year that we're talking about, Looney and Donners, don't make the team. So it was a good seventh round pick. He made the, if your seventh round pick makes your team and is on it for 2 years, and now it's going to be 3 years, and he don't seem to be going anywhere, I think it's a good pick.
And don't forget the legendary Jeff Janis back in 2014, who.
That was a good stuff.
Made
that
huge waves as a seventh rounder. Yeah. You know, Paul, I don't know if we've ever spent much time talking about special teamers, so I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on Hunter Bradley, or are you just simply one of those that says, look, if I don't hear his name, that's a good thing and I'm happy?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, you guys can correct me, but I don't have any snaps that come to mind over the last 2 years of, you know, him shooting them over J.K. Scott's head or anything like that. So, like Mark said, he made the team. He's consistent. They haven't brought in anyone to compete with them, so they're obviously happy, and he's doing his job. And, Jason, what you said about him and J.K. Scott working on the field goal unit, Jason Wilde in The Athletic last fall had an article. They're actually neighbors here in Green Bay, and they practice in the backyard.
Real
awesome.
That's great.
You love to see that, and especially if you're the next door guy, you kind of get the inside scoop. You're like, all right, we're gonna be in good shape this week. They got it down. They got their timing down. So that's awesome. I love to hear that. So then we move on to James Looney. So James Looney was drafted as a defensive lineman. All right, then in early December last year. I didn't make the team, like you said, Mark. He's a practice squad guy. But then in early December last year, it's reported that he's going to convert to tight end. And he dropped 30 pounds. So he's now going to try to compete for a spot against what I would assume would be Robert Tonyan and Mercedes Lewis. But I don't know if he's going to provide them any competition. I haven't heard anything about how well he's done in practice or what if any kind of chance he has to actually crack the roster. So, Mark, I think we talked about Looney a little bit when the news first hit at the end of last year, and we haven't really learned a whole lot else since then, so I don't know if there's any updates you have on how you feel about that.
It was a nice story when it, like you said, when it first happened, like, wow, okay, move him to tight end. But then they draft a tight end in the third round this year, so that kind of, I think, puts the – and they re-signed Lewis. Again, he's a – I don't see him being on a 53-man roster unless, I don't know, again, crazy injuries or something bad happens. You never know. But as of today, I think he's a very, very long shot to make the man roster.
Yeah, I think so too. And even with dropping 30 pounds with where he was at size-wise, I'd have to imagine that maybe he's an even bigger dog than Mercedes Lewis. So is Aaron Rodgers going to say at the line of scrimmage, bigger dog? Or I don't know, Paul. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't see where he fits in. I think tight end's pretty much set with DeGuara, Sternberger, Lewis, and Tanyan. And even for the top tight ends in the draft each year, we don't always or rarely do we see them make a big impact during their rookie year. For tight ends, it's a difficult position, having to learn the nuances of, you know, the blocking technique and responsibilities like an offensive lineman, but also the route running and responsibilities as a receiver as well. It's a lot to take on, even for guys who've been playing that position all through college and are at the top of that level. So for him to be converting to that position, you know, it's only hasn't even been a full year yet. I mean, I just don't see how he's going to come in and make an impact. If I had to guess, maybe they stash him on the practice squad, because I find it hard to believe that halfway through last season or whenever he decided to make the switch or they asked him to, that they would ask him to do that and then cut him, you know, 9 months later. So maybe he's on the practice squad and they just, well, you know, yeah, we'll see what we can do him. Or see what we have.
Yeah, keep him on the practice squad for another year. I mean, why not? It doesn't, especially didn't they expand the practice squad this year as well?
Yeah, I believe so.
Did that go through, or is it just being talked about? So, yeah, I mean, he's not going to be on a 53. I can't imagine him on a 53.
Well, you need somebody to simulate the speed of Jimmy Graham in practice now that he's the tight end for the Bears. So maybe James Looney can handle those duties. And you've got a tight end that runs about as fast as Graham, right? So I'm not
Jason's
hearing.
Just full of zingers.
I'm not hearing the laughter. I'm not hearing the laughter today. All right. Anyway. Okay. Well, now we can get into kind of a good meat portion of the conversation. This will round out the 2018 draft. So I saved the wide receivers. So MVS and EQ for this, because we've talked about these guys a lot. They've also, like Josh Jackson, they've slipped their way into our conversations. And I don't know what else there is really to add about Marquez Valdes-Scantling. He's just going to have to show up and kind of improve and be more of what he was in 2018 and show that speed is back. Mark, you and I talked about how there might have been an injury that he was dealing with last season that just made him ineffective. Paul, you had the stats where his numbers just completely fell off a cliff in the, you know, the second, third, and fourth quarters of the season. So I don't know what else there is to add other than we'll have to just kind of wait and see. Paul, I'll start with you with regards to MVS. I'm sure you've probably written a lot about him during this off season, and whether or not you think he's primed for that bounce back or not.
Yeah, I actually do think he is. You know, we think about the bad part, the second half of last year, where, as you said, his snaps and numbers just fell off a cliff. But the first half of the season, he had 21 receptions and averaged nearly 20 yards per catch with two touchdowns, 133 yards against Oakland, 99 against Denver. And then during his rookie year as well, we saw those flashes. And he's still the best deep threat option on this team. He's got that 4.38 speed, and I know everyone's focused and talking about the Packers becoming more run-oriented, and I'm sure they are to some extent, but off of play action, Rodgers still likes to take his shots downfield. They're still going to need that deep threat, and I think MVS is going to get plenty of opportunities. But like Jackson, it's going to be important for him to have a good summer, to build that confidence back up for himself, but also in Rodgers and the coaching staff.
Well, they have to believe in both him and Equanimeous St. Brown, because, again, they didn't address wide receiver outside of adding Devin Funchess, and if you want to throw Reggie Begelton in the mix, but he's hardly any sort of a given. And Mark, we've talked about all those factors before too, so the team's obviously banking on Valdes-Scantling to kind of return to form.
Yeah, and I think Paul brought up a great point. He's their deep threat, and I think I'm not the mind of Matt LaFleur. I don't know, but my thoughts on the Packers wide receivers, I think all three of us agree that we're not as concerned about wide receiver as a lot of people are, and it's not. And on my list of concerns for this Packer team, it's not that high. I think receivers overall are going to be okay. I mean, you have a tremendous one in Davante Adams. So that's not every team in the league has a Davante Adams. They do. And I think between a Funchess, who's going to be a good red zone threat, between MVS, who's going to be your home run hitter, I think St. One, we'll get to St. Brown later, but I think he's going to have a role. I think LaFleur is going to mix and match, and none of their overall numbers might not jump off the page at you, but when you add them all up, I think you're going to see, like, hey, you know what? There was good production from the third, fourth, fifth guys, whatever, however you want to look at. And MVS, like you said, you know, not every team has a guy that runs a 4.38, you know, and like he's we've seen him do it. That's what I always say. When I've seen a guy do something, then I know he can do it again. And I never, like, Josh Jackson, we haven't seen do anything, so I can't say. I mean, I saw him in college, but it's a different game in the NFL. I've seen Valdes-Scantling make plays. I've seen him make important plays at important times of the game. So, yes, I would not. Again, I don't think he's going to put up super numbers and go to the Pro Bowl. I think he can be a contributing factor to a good Packer team next year.
Well, that's a good point you bring up, Mark. There's only so many footballs that can go around and passes and plays. And if the running backs are going to get involved and if they're going to focus more on the run, and who knows if DeGuara becomes a bigger part of the offense early on, Jay Sternberger is going to take a step forward this season, all those things, there may not need to be a ton of pressure on these receivers. That could actually end up being a good thing. I mean, if you want to jump over to Equanimeous St. Brown, I mean, it's kind of a similar story, but his injury was it was obvious, and we know he was hurt. He had the gnarly ankle injury suffered in Canada. I always have to throw Canada under the bus every time we talk about it because that surface was just so bad. But he missed all of last season after showing a couple of flashes in his rookie year. Here's another guy we've talked about a lot. You know, the one thing I'll say about Equanimeous St. Brown, because we don't know how well he's going to return from injury, I would assume he's had a lot of time to recover and that his leg is better and he's going to have a chance to be full go. At least we know that he had the quarterback's attention in 2018. Aaron Rodgers looked for him at times. He found him at a critical point late in the game against the 49ers when they beat San Francisco on Monday night in 2018. He made a big catch against the Jets late in the season in a game that Aaron Rodgers decided, look, we're going to win this game. I don't want to be the crappiest road team in Packers history. We're going to win this game. And he found EQ for a big gainer in that one. The question is, will it continue in 2019? I'm inclined to say that it will. Paul, do you see it any differently?
No, I agree. I mean, I would like to think so, but like you said, we just don't know. He popped a few times during 2018. Rodgers talked highly of him even last summer before the injury happened, and I think he can be a nice big slot receiver for the Packers. I think that's a good spot for him to fit in. But going back to what Mark was saying previously, with all the pass catchers that the Packers have and in LaFleur's offense, this isn't going to be the 4 or 5 wide Green Bay Packers that we're used to seeing. It's going to be 2 and 3 receivers at a time rotating around in and out with Devontae being the one constant. So that the Packers don't necessarily need 5 or 6, you know, stud receivers like they had back in the day. If they have 3 or 4, they're going to be fine because they have plenty of pass catchers. You know, if we lose the title receiver, tight end, running back, and have pass catchers, the Packers have 11 or 12 between those position groups who are all going to see playing time, who all have experience in that role, you know, talking about the tight ends and running backs. So I'm not, like you guys said, I'm not concerned either. And I think I'm excited to see both Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Equanimeous St. Brown out of this draft class and the guys that we've covered, you know, not including Jair. I think these are the two that have the biggest chance to make a big impact this year.
And if they do, then according to Mark's calculation or you know, Mark, I'm giving you all the credit. But then the Packers this could turn out to be an okay draft. But again, in kind of summarizing it, I tend to take a more conservative approach and say, look, I've watched a lot of football. Mark, you've watched more football than I have. Paul, you've watched a lot of football. We've seen so many examples of things work out that we didn't think would, things not work out that we were sure were going to work out. It's impossible to tell, and we just don't have anything tangible at this point really to point to. But if these two guys pan out, Mark, to you, 2018, that does that kind of redeem the draft?
Absolutely. Because then if St. Brown and MVS turn out to be contributing players, then you wind up with 5 players out of 11 that are contributing to the team. And yeah, it could have been better. Yeah, because your second and third round picks, if Jackson and Burks don't contribute, that's, you know, shame on you for taking them in the second and third round and not seeing anything. But no, I mean, if you go, it's like the year prior, the Kevin King draft. I mean, Josh Jones was a terrible second round pick, right? This Beagle, not a real good fourth round pick. Aaron Jones was such a good fifth round pick that he kind of makes up for it, you know? So it doesn't, after, the day after the draft, it doesn't matter where you were picked anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's other than your paycheck, it doesn't really matter. So, yeah, and again, getting back to that draft, when they got St. Brown in the sixth round, I was like, whoa. Because he was supposed to be like, some people had him as high as the second, which I thought was a little too high, but I thought definitely no later than fourth.
Yeah,
probably
fourth.
Third. Mm-hmm. You know? For him to slip to the sixth, when they made that pick, I said, oh, I like this pick in the sixth round. You get this because Notre Dame's on TV all the time. So you got a chance to watch him play. I thought he was a pretty good player. And they get him, and I still think he's a pretty good player.
Yeah, there's the value. That's your whole
not
value.
Not a great player, you know what I mean, but a good player. You know, yeah. Pretty good, solid guy that can come in and contribute. I like what Paul said. I think he can be a good slot receiver.
Hey, a sixth-round pick, if you take away last year, a sixth-round pick that made a couple of critical catches, he didn't have the huge numbers. But if some of these guys get on the field, that's already doing more than on average a lot of sixth and seventh rounders do. Because by the time you get to the round six and seven, you're kind of in flyer mode. And if some of those guys even stick on the practice squad, then you know you still got a chance to develop them and see what they can turn into. But that he was an interesting case because I think some of the reason why he fell was because of some of the hype surrounding him and his family. And again, I think, you know, I draw my own comparison here, but he might have been in a way a victim of timing. Because if correct me if I'm wrong, and Paul, I'll ask you this because I think we've talked about it before, but wasn't that around the same time that LeVar Ball was in the news every single day, and it just maybe teams had like that fatigue over an overbearing parent?
Yeah, that was during LeVar Ball's heyday. Whether that correlation's there, I'm not positive on. But one other thing I wanted to add was what I find so interesting about this draft class is, if MVS, EQ, if they hit this year, or any two that you want to choose, this draft class is going to be fine, especially with Jair, who's all pro potential. But there's also a scenario where, EQ doesn't rebound from his injury, MVS doesn't bounce back. Oren Burks, Josh Jackson still don't see playing time. I think there's also a, maybe not as likely, but a realistic scenario where that happens. And then all of a sudden, we're going into year four. They still have a year on their contract left, and there's a possibility a year from now, we're talking, are MVS, EQ, Oren Burks, Josh Jackson going to make the week one roster? So now, if all those picks early on are not even making it through their rookie deal potentially, this draft class just takes a total turn. And I'm not predicting that by any means. I don't think that's going to happen. Obviously, I don't hope that to happen. But I think there is a scenario where that is a possibility.
Yeah, it is. And that's why this was a great topic. Because we're finally at the point where we can talk about it and appropriately say, hey, we could make these judgments. Because this is about when the rubber meets the road and you know what you have in a lot of these players. So or what you don't have. Yeah, it's it can go either way. And that's the thing is, even coming out of this conversation, I learned a lot from what you guys had to offer, but I still don't feel any differently right now. And nor do I think any of us do, because we need to, it's what matters. It's what happens on the field that matters. So this was a good one. I'm looking forward to, I know I say every week, well, it's another week later and we're closer to training camp and hopefully we'll know something, but it just doesn't seem like we're hearing a whole lot with regards to what's going to happen other than camp is going to start. And until we hear otherwise, that's what we're going with. So Paul, we mentioned all your great work over at Dairyland Express. What's upcoming this week?
Coming out Saturday, today, I have bounce back players. Now they're not necessarily players that I think will bounce back, but they're players that if they are able to bounce back, they're going to provide a big boost for this Packers team. And then just leading up to training camp, looking at individual players moving forward.
Nice. Awesome. And then Mark over Packer Report, what do we got to look forward to?
I have a story about some defensive battles I'm looking forward to on that'll come out Monday. And then my last part of the Packer by numbers, the 90s come out this week, and I'll let you guess who number 92 is.
Yeah, I was just going to say not a whole lot of mystery
we'll
there.
We'll save that for the readers.
Yeah. Okay. You know, my clue...
I don't want a spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, if anyone's not sure, I would just say if you're not sure who you think Mark's choice is for number 92, maybe just pray on it. You know, maybe the answer will come to you. So, all right, guys, this has been a good one. Look forward to doing it again next week. Everybody enjoy the weekend, and as always, go Pack, go. We'll be right back.